WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Elkton, without running water for part of last weekend, works to restore service to residents. Stanton releases the first draft of its flood resilience system. And a silent disco fundraiser is coming to Charlottesville as part of the Tom Tom Festival. This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, April 23rd. Elkton's Public Works crew is finishing repairs to failed infrastructure that left local residents without running water for part of the weekend, WMRA's Randy Behage reports.
Nearly all of Elkton's approximately 3,000 residents lost water on Friday afternoon when a pump failed in one of the town's two wells. Mayor Josh Gooden said Public Works employees replaced that pump, but it failed and had to be replaced with a second new pump. However, the hydrologic saga didn't end there. In the wee hours of Saturday morning, workers fixed electrical issues related to the new pump, then had to bring in a generator when the system's main breaker failed. But the tanks still weren't filling up.
One of our crew members noticed that there was a water line that had basically fallen off from underneath the bridge. The bracket that held the pipe gave way, and the entire section of pipe was just laying on an island in the middle of the Shenandoah River. So all the water was draining to this area, regardless of being pumped out of the wells.
They ran a 5-inch yellow hose between fire hydrants on either end of the Old Spotswood Trail Bridge to circumvent the break and provide water to the west side of town. On Wednesday, construction was underway to replace the permanent water line, which should be operational by Thursday morning. After water service resumed, some local residents commented on social media that it looked cloudy coming out of the taps.
We just asked them to kind of run an outside faucet to drain some of that cloudiness out of their water, and then hopefully it should kind of resolve. At my home, it was a lot of air in the water, so like it just was cloudy for a little bit and then came back to normal.
Gooden said he doesn't yet know the total cost of the repairs. He thanked the town's public works crew, Rockingham County Fire and Rescue, the Virginia Department of Transportation, and the volunteers who stepped up to get things flowing again. For WMRA News, I'm Randy Behage.
You can see photos from this story at WMRA.org and on our app. Well, continuing the theme of dealing with water woes, the city of Stanton has reached a milestone in its efforts to protect the community from future flooding with the release of a first draft of the Stanton Flood Resilience Plan. WMRA's Meredith McCool has the details.
History and hydrology are in constant tension in the Queen City.
Nowadays, we would not build a city like this. It's really dangerous to have buildings that people are in constantly sitting, not only in the floodplain, but in the regulatory floodway.
Willow Hughes is the Environmental Programs Administrator for the city of Stanton.
But if you are in the floodplain like that, it is probably going to flood. And the wharf in particular is the lowest point for about a 12 square mile drainage area. It's very large, and it is very highly impervious area.
In an effort to ease this tension, the city of Stanton has developed a flood resilience plan, which is now available for public review. According to Katie Shoemaker of Wetland Studies and Solutions Incorporated,
and this is a planning level document, and it's a living document. It's something that the city expects to come back to periodically and refresh to see how things have changed over time. In some ways, the main goal of this plan is to open up funding to actually implement these projects to improve resilience through the Community Flood Preparedness Fund, or CFPF, which opens up funding to localities to improve their resilience to flooding throughout the state of Virginia.
That's a grant program administered by the Virginia Department of Conservation and Recreation. On Wednesday, April 15th, the city hosted a community listening session to gather feedback and answer questions.
Flooding can happen anywhere in the city where drainage isn't cooperating with rainfall, reflecting the importance of having the entire community involved in this process, because everyone can be affected by flooding.
Joni Laird, a former City of Stanton employee, was among the small group of community members in attendance.
We did the first comprehensive study in Stanton, and I became very familiar with what the issues were, one of which was storm drainage. And now the city's changed its position from prevention to resilience, which is sort of counterintuitive.
How do you find those two to be different?
Well, preventing what happened in 2020 is very different than how you recover from it. If you don't have the problem in the first place, you don't have to worry about recovering from it. And I think being proactive is extremely important for the city at this juncture, because people can't afford to go through that on a regular basis.
I shared Laird's comment with Katie Shoemaker and Nathan Staley, also with Wetland Studies and Solutions Incorporated.
You can't prevent the weather as a step one. You can build in certain ways to be able to manage it better, but it's always going to be a trade-off of what people are willing to do up front to prevent negative impacts. And that balance usually doesn't go so far as 2 500-year storms in a row, because that is a significant amount of change for an area like this.
Yeah, and expense.
Huge expense.
Hughes explained what hydrologists mean by the term 500-year flood.
That's really more so meant to express kind of the frequency at which a flood would statistically occur. It does not mean you see one every 500 years. It's a certain size storm or intensity storm, and the 500 years is just to express that that's a really big one, a really intense one, one we would not expect to see all the time. But we did receive two in that August. Yeah.
Wetland Studies and Solutions Incorporated provides consulting across the eastern United States. I asked them,
is this the worst you've ever seen?
I will put it this way. When Helene hit and the damage happened, Stanton came to mind. Oh man, if this had hit in Stanton, what would that look like? Because why is it called the wharf? It's because where all the streams come together in the middle of town. And the age of the infrastructure and yet its proximity to the stream systems, it's a big challenge.
We are doing a study to explore what it looks like to daylight the wharf, meaning kind of take the top off the tunnels there and make the streams flow straight through. But we found that that has very little benefit to flooding. It doesn't really increase the capacity. It doesn't really give the water anywhere else to go. So we are kind of limited, especially in downtown, with what we can do. And the study we did to show engineering solutions, almost all of them just weren't feasible. I mean, they were tens of millions of dollars, and that's a really big ask. So I think part of what we came to with that conclusion was, if there aren't necessarily fixes for downtown, that is why we have our flood sensors, because they can at least provide that early warning for people to protect themselves and hopefully their property.
City Environmental Program representatives will be available to answer questions and take comments at Earth Day Stanton on Saturday, April 25th from 11 to 3 at the Gypsy Hill Park Bandstand. The city is continuing to collect comments on the draft plan through May 2nd. For WMRA News, I'm Meredith McCool.
We posted photos and links to more information about this story at WMRA.org and on our app. The legal fight over Virginia's redistricting plan continues with court challenges. Whitney Evans with our partner station VPM News explains.
A Tazewell Circuit Court judge on Wednesday ruled the referendum unconstitutional and blocked the new election maps. The state plans to immediately appeal the decision. The Virginia Supreme Court is set to accept briefs in a related case today and hear oral arguments on Monday. The court ruled earlier this year that it would weigh in only if the Yes campaign succeeded. At least two other lawsuits against the State Board of Elections are still pending in the city of Richmond. The newly drawn congressional maps would likely net Virginia Democrats 4 new congressional seats.
Whitney Evans reporting. Also on Wednesday morning in Richmond, Democrats who led the successful redistricting effort celebrated that win. But as Radio IQ's Brad Kuttner found out, not everyone was thrilled with the results.
We knew this was going to be hard, but that's why we're still fighting. We're still fighting in the courts. We think we're going to win in the courts.
That's Republican House Minority Leader Terry Kilgore speaking to reporters Wednesday morning after Virginians voted for an amendment that will likely flip 4 of the Commonwealth's GOP-held congressional seats to Democrats. He and other Republicans have set their hopes on a collection of lawsuits they hope will overturn Tuesday's 3-point win. But Democratic House Speaker Don Scott wasn't worried.
First thing they do when they can't win an election, now they're trying to undo it, and they're running to the courthouse to overturn the will of the voters. The last thing Republicans want to see in Virginia is a voter.
And Democratic Senate President Louise Lucas, who was the most outspoken advocate for the 10-1 maps, was just as thrilled with the results.
And what started in Texas didn't stay in Texas. And what started here will not stay here either. Virginia sent a message. If you try to rig the system, we fight back. If you try to take power from voters, We will take it right back.
Governor Abigail Spanberger credited the voters, but also noted,
the margin's greater than the 2021 gubernatorial win.
That was the win for Spanberger's predecessor, Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin, who made a late entry into the effort to stop the amendment. As for the court battle, the Supreme Court of Virginia will hold oral arguments in one of the disputes Monday. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Shortly after the redistricting referendum was called on Tuesday, Governor Abigail Spanberger appeared on MS Now with Lawrence O'Donnell to discuss the measure. She said she was pleased with the outcome and that residents understood the election's stakes.
What's really important about what we did here on the ground in Virginia is that this referendum went before the people. We made sure that the map that would be put in place after this referendum was successful was available to voters.
Spanberger said she wanted the vote to be with the people. She added that the referendum preserves the Commonwealth's bipartisan redistricting commission for the future. Governor Spanberger is back to considering the original legislation that would create a retail marketplace for marijuana. Radio IQ's Michael Pope reports.
Members of the General Assembly are passing a joint priority of the House and Senate back to Governor Abigail Spanberger, rejecting her amendments to a bill that would create a retail marketplace for marijuana. Senator LaCharisse Aird is a Democrat from Petersburg who says the governor should sign the bill now on her desk.
Virginians have been very clear about their expectations of a cannabis retail marketplace. The enrolled version of the bill fulfills that expectation, and hers does not. And her obligation is to the individuals that she represents.
Republican House Leader Terry Kilgore says he hopes the governor vetoes the bill.
I'm afraid that what's going on is really going to push a lot of people to the black market because of the cost involved. And, you know, a lot of folks don't want to smell marijuana walking up and down the street. And I'm worried about that for, you know, especially some of our smaller towns and things of that nature.
One of the changes Spanberger wanted was delaying when the marketplace would begin from January until next summer. Members of the General Assembly rejected those this week. Now she's got a decision to make: allow the bill to become law without her signature, sign the bill, or veto it.
The governor is also considering legislation that could define her relationship with labor groups. Michael has the details.
On the campaign trail, Abigail Spanberger said she was not interested in overturning the so-called right-to-work law. Since she became governor, she rejected a casino proposal that was a top priority for labor. Now, labor groups across Virginia are asking her to sign a bill that would allow for collective bargaining for state and local government employees. Kurt Dietrich is vice president of the Virginia Professional Firefighters.
Virginia's firefighters have waited long enough to have this same right that firefighters in 35 other states enjoy every day. It was made pretty clear on the campaign trail that this was a priority for her in supporting Virginia's firefighters, and not just the firefighters, but all of our workers across the Commonwealth and in the public sector. And it's time for her to sign it.
Republican House Leader Terry Kilgore says the governor should veto the bill.
You know, I think it's a bad deal. I think it could be the biggest tax increase we could ever see in Virginia on the property taxes. So a lot of businesses across Virginia and counties, especially local governments I've heard from, don't want her to sign it. So we'll see.
Spanberger made some suggested changes to the bill that members of the General Assembly rejected this week. Now she's got a decision to make: allow the bill to become law without her signature, sign the bill, or veto it. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
The General Assembly also did not accept Spanberger's amendments on immigration enforcement. Legislators did accept some of the governor's changes to a bill known as the Fair and Affordable Electric Rates and Reliability Act. Patrick Larson with partner station VPM News has more.
Spanberger removed language from the bill ordering the State Corporation Commission to assess specific data center costs that are currently paid for by all Dominion Energy customers, rather than just the energy-hungry facilities. Instead, she included more general language, which Delegate Destiny Levere Bowling, a Henrico Democrat, described like this.
A permanent policy that the SEC is to ensure that data center customers have no adverse effects on rates of any other customers.
Spanberger also wanted to limit Dominion's ability ability to get approval for expensive undergrounding projects that greatly reduce power outages and outage response time for some customers. The legislature rejected that change. They're sending the amended bill back to her desk. She has 30 days to approve or deny the final language.
Patrick Larson reporting. Finally today, a silent disco fundraiser is coming to Charlottesville this weekend as part of the Tom Tom Festival, bringing together music, community, and support for survivors. WMRE's Angelique Schindler reports.
On the downtown mall, people will be dancing, just not all to the same song. At the Groove for Good Silent Disco, each person gets a pair of headphones with three different channels: oldies, pop, and 90s or 2000s hits. The result is a crowd moving together, but to completely different beats. Sherry McKinney leads the Foothills Children's Advocacy Center.
And people are singing, and people are dancing, but people are singing different songs and dancing, and it's very fun.
The event is part of the Downtown Mall Block Party and builds on a similar silent disco hosted by the Sexual Assault Resource Agency, or SARA for short, last fall. This time, the two organizations are teaming up, raising money through a pay-what-you-can model to keep the event accessible. McKinney says that support is essential. Foothills assists with child abuse investigations but isn't fully government funded. The fundraiser also reflects a growing partnership between Foothills and SARA, which now share an office space in Charlottesville, an uncommon setup that helps them better serve overlapping clients. McKinney says that she hopes that collaboration could one day expand into a centralized family justice center, bringing services like law enforcement, therapy, and advocacy under one roof. And if you're on the fence,
come. It's going to be a blast, and it's just a really nice way to get out of the house and do something completely different.
The Silent Disco runs Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. on the Downtown Mall with music provided by the entertainment company Good Times Only. For WMRA News, I'm Angelique Schindler.
We have a link to ticketing information on our website at WMRA.org and on our app. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Thursday.